Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Sarah Goodman. I'm the ministerial intern at the First Unitarian Society, and I'm really excited to come back and see you again. I was here in July, so it's good to see all your faces. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and an open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender, or family structure. We welcome you no matter what your age or your abilities or inabilities. Later in the service, we'll invite visitors, guests, and returning friends to introduce ourselves so that we may get to know you better. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services, and they're presented here usually by a Prairie member or the minister Sandy Ingram or a member of the wider community like myself. And today I'll be presenting on vulnerable change. So the opening words this morning come from Mark Bellatini and his poetry book, Sonatas for Voice and Silence. Let the sky above me unroll like a scroll, and let me read upon it today's texts for my life. You are alive here and now. Love boldly and always tell the truth. Let the wind arrange the naked branches of the maples and aspens and oaks into sacred letters which proclaim this sacred text. Your heart beats now, not tomorrow or yesterday. Love the gift of your life and do no harm. Let the eyes and hands and faces of all the varieties of people with whom I share this earth be chapter and verse in this great scripture text. Life is struggle and loss, and also tenderness and joy. Live all of your life, not just part of it. And now let all the poems and scriptures and novels and films and songs and cries and lullabies and prayers and anthems open up before our free hearts. Let them open like a Torah, like a psalm, like a gospel, and like an apocalypse. And let them proclaim, do not think you can take away each other's troubles, but try to be with each other in them. Remember, you are part, not all, great, but not greatest, small, precious, brief breaths in this great wind of creation. And remember that every single human word is finally and divinely cradled in the strong and secure arms of silence. And for our chalice lighting words, if you would join me, the words are printed in the order of service. Thank you. We ignite this flame of love and keep it safe in the chalice, a symbol of our compassion, holding it up for all to see, so that all who dare can share in it. We send our light out, not in a protective cover, but open and vulnerable, so that our light can change the world. The reading today is The Power of Vulnerability by Emily Castriel. And it comes from the United Kingdom's Huffington Post in the culture section. And it's actually a review for photographer Andrew Zuckerman's photographs of flowers. The purple Datura flower looks dominant and beautiful and even a little menacing. It dares to stand naked against a stark white void. It has no stem, branch, or leaf. Everything is exposed and nothing is hidden. We know that its petals are momentary, so delicate that merely touching them between two fingers will render them non-existent. Yet The confidence which with the Datura projects itself in such an isolated, pure state demonstrates a rare, compelling power. This dynamic between the vulnerable and the powerful brings a relevancy to the image of the Datura and other flowers by New York-based photographer Andrew Zuckerman. The juxtaposition of rigidity and rigor and a fragile, almost feminine form gives these images their distinctive beauty. Up until now, Zuckerman explained, most flowers have been portrayed as frilly little things, but to me, the flowers that I've chosen to shoot are painted as incredibly strong forms, almost architectural. Communicating our vulnerability can also be read as a signal of our inner strength. Last month, Antoinette Tuft, the school bookkeeper in Georgia, armed only with her vulnerability, deployed it with extraordinarily good resourcefulness. Tuft opened up to Michael Brandon Hill, telling him about the breakup of her long-standing marriage and the challenges of having a disabled son. She was able to convince Hill, who was brandishing an assault-style weapon with 500 rounds of ammunition, to surrender. We have also become more willing to invite our friends and a broader public into empathizing our every mood. Many of us have become blasé about sharing every machination of our internal lives on Twitter or Facebook, which today is actively encouraging us to post on how we are feeling. Immersed in a whirlpool of information about our friends' psychological dramas, have we become less quick to judge? Projecting vulnerability as a sign of strength is nothing new. It's a theme running deep through Christian iconography and 20th century Latin American literature and painting. The Mexican painter Frida Kahlo, for example, placed her own suffering due to a horrific injury in a bus accident at the heart of her images, projecting herself with a proud and defiant gaze. Since I've had kids, Zuckerman told Tate, I've become more interested in vulnerable and fragile subjects. And this is his process of capturing the peak moment of the flower's life. It also demands an unusual degree of care. From the moment when the flowers were cut to when I received them, it felt like we were handling a Fabergé egg or a baby. Everything had to be calm and quiet on the shoots, almost like a surgical operation. However, by choosing to portray the flowers as powerful and strong, Zuckerman is also revealing a deeper truth. The vulnerable have power. In order to portray our vulnerability to others, we have to acknowledge it to ourselves and be brave enough to disregard the defenses we habitually use to protect ourselves. But in doing so, we open ourselves up to deeper relationships that can evoke in others as well as in ourselves a broader desire to protect and nurture. There ends the reading. So when I sat down to write this sermon, it took me a while to find my inspiration. I wasn't really sure about the connection between vulnerability and change, and I was kind of confused as to why I chose this topic in the first place. Vulnerability is important for making connections with other people and for asking for help and other things, but I wasn't quite sure what connection vulnerability had to making change in the world. But then I remembered the reason that I chose this title for the service, because vulnerability is more than needing help. There's also vulnerability in offering help. If we are to create change, if we are to make this strange, hard, crazy world better for everyone, we have to be willing to see our own vulnerabilities. We have to be willing to face our fears and to be open to change. Let's think for a minute about change. There are two ways, really, to see change. The first is from the point of view of someone who relies on stability. Their reaction is often, I don't want to change. I don't want this situation to change. I am happy the way I am. I'm happy with things the way they are. This viewpoint is often based on fear. If things change, then I might be worse off than I was before, or even than I am right now. Another way change is often viewed or experienced is from someone who enjoys the excitement of new things. This reaction to change is often, oh, cool, I wonder how this new change will shape my life differently. People who react this way are often more resilient than people who react with fear. In one of my classes last year in seminary, a visiting scholar came to speak to us about putting together a ritual while leaving portions of the ceremony open for improvisation. We began the class with an exercise that involved the group of 15 of us reading a piece of scripture aloud, but without any preassigned parts, without any guidance as when to begin or when to end, and when to start again. But we were to read it aloud and allow what happened to happen. She explained that if four people read the same part at the same time, or if there was a long time of silence, that was the way the scripture wanted to be read. Okay, most of us were hesitant and confused and uncomfortable with this process in the beginning. But once it got going, and suddenly three people spoke out at the same time, and then someone decided to reread a part because they thought it was important, and then there was this long silence that rang out, and it felt like a holy process. She taught us something about being open to change, being open to the unknown. She taught us about letting go of anxiety. This lesson, and particularly the next lesson she taught us, really taught me something I've carried with me ever since. So here's the lesson. She asked us, "What do you think the difference or the opposite of anxiety is?" The opposite of anxiety. So we threw out a variety of words like calm and acceptance and things along that line. And her response was, "The opposite of anxiety is curiosity." Anxiety is, oh no, what's gonna happen? And curiosity is, oh yeah, I wonder what's gonna happen. Anxiety is thinking about the outcome of events and imagining the worst. And curiosity is thinking about the outcome of events and imagining the best. Reacting with curiosity is one outcome of resilience. And resiliency only comes when we're willing to be vulnerable to outcomes beyond our control. In order to embrace positive change, we need to be willing to let bad things happen. It sounds terrifying, doesn't it? Whew. Sounds like opening the front door to our house and inviting everyone in, the strangers, the people who want to hurt us, who want to take our things. It sounds like publishing an ad in the newspaper even saying, come to my house and steal all of my stuff. I'll be gone from 6 to 6. So you can be there. It feels like being helpless and scared and open to all the pain that we're trying to avoid in life. But being vulnerable is not being helpless. Vulnerability is not being weak or worthless. We are all vulnerable. Whether we hide it behind a mask or show it to the world, we are all vulnerable. It's only those people who are willing to accept their vulnerability who are able to be resilient. Say you had a bad fall on the ice while you were skating when you were a kid. And now that you're all grown up, your friend takes you to an ice skating rink, and all you can think about is that you might fall down. You might land on the ice and hurt yourself again. So what do you do? You hold on to the side of the rink inching along, moving slowly. But that's not even ice skating. You can't enjoy yourself because you're too afraid that you're going to be hurt. Now assume that you've been working on this vulnerability stuff for a while and realize that your fear is getting in the way. You have a couple of choices. You could quit skating altogether, leave your friend in the lurch. You could ask for help. Ask your friend or someone else to take your hand and go with you around the ice. Or you could accept the inevitability of falling and throw yourself down on the ice just to get it over with. If falling is the worst that could happen, wouldn't intentionally falling make the fear a little less scary? Wouldn't you now be able to say, oh, that wasn't so bad, pick yourself up, risk skating around the rink, maybe having fun, maybe even finding out that you're good at it? That's resilience. That is bouncing back from a fall. That's getting back on the horse, brushing yourself off and saying, that was the worst that could happen? No problem. We've been taught a lot of things. We've been taught to fear a lot of things in this life, and there isn't enough to go around. We fear that there's not enough food or housing or not enough money, especially not enough love for everyone, and that if we aren't perfect, that we're not worthy of connection and love. We've been taught to fear that people will take advantage of us if they know that we have weaknesses. And so we shore up our vulnerability by building walls and keeping secrets. We all have our different ways of keeping people out. Maybe you act like you're always happy, but you're really, really down most of the time. Maybe you don't reach out pretending like everything's okay when really you're hurting. And sure, these are helpful tools for some situations, but the problem is that we can't hide who we are and connect in a real way with other people. If you only ever show people your mask, you will never trust that people really love you. I was reminded recently of the Johari window. I bet many of you have heard of this exercise or experienced it yourself. You're given a list of adjectives and you pick 5 or 6 that describe you, and then other folks who know you pick 5 or 6 they think describe you, and the results are divided into 4 quadrants. So the top half are the words that other people chose for you, and the left half is the words you've used to describe yourself. And then the right is the words you didn't choose. So two of these quadrants are the most interesting. The top right quadrant, which are the blind spot, and the bottom left quadrant, which is known as the hidden area. In the blind spot, words are there that describe how others see you that you don't see in yourself. And actually, people are usually surprised how many good words end up in their blind spot. It's really easy to not think well of ourselves. The other quadrant that's important, the hidden or facade quadrant, is usually one that's brought up when we're talking about vulnerability. In this quadrant are the things that you say about yourself that other people don't see. This is the quadrant with most room to grow. These things that we hide about ourselves are often our most vulnerable parts, the things we don't want others to see. So we create a facade, a mask that we put on to cover our flaws, and a wall that we put up to hide our pain. But here's the rub. Shutting out hurt also shuts out happiness. Avoiding pain means avoiding joy. We can't pick and choose. The only way to experience real love is to be open to experiencing real hurt. The only way to change is to face our fears. Vulnerability is coming out from behind your mask and feeling the power of your authenticity. In his book, The Barefoot Doctor's Guide to the Tao, a spiritual handbook for the urban warrior, long title, author Stephen Russell says, vulnerability is the only authentic state. Being vulnerable means being open, open for wounding, but also for pleasure. Being open to the wounds of life means also being open to the bounty and the beauty. Don't mask or deny your vulnerability. It is your greatest asset. Be vulnerable. Quake and shake in your boots with it. The new goodness that is coming to you in the form of people, of situations, and things can only come to you when you are vulnerable. But we have been taught that showing vulnerability is weakness. But really, showing vulnerability is power. Power is more than building walls or wielding weapons. Power can be allowing someone else to understand who you are. Power is hearing who another person is and connecting to them. Power is seeing the suffering of others and choosing to recognize that it could happen to you and moving forward anyway. Power is saying, I have been hurt and I will be hurt again, and I choose to remain open to what life brings me. It takes a lot of strength to live that way. It takes a lot of courage, and there's so much that can happen to us in this strange, crazy, hard world. There is so much suffering, so many disasters waiting for us around the corner. If we let our fear run the show, we are likely to stick our head in the sand anytime we get a whiff of anything that might upset us. This may be why so many people don't do anything about the environment or homelessness or any social justice thing at all. It's too big, it's too hard, it's too scary to look at the suffering and imagine it could happen to me. I don't want to face the people who remind me of the fact that I could lose everything and be destitute, living on the street. I don't want to face the fact that we as a country have effectively abandoned the poor. We as a culture have come to be so fixated on scarcity that even when owning a home and having thousands of dollars in savings doesn't feel like enough to keep us safe. How can we give money to anyone else if we don't feel like we have enough? According to Brené Brown in her book, Daring Greatly, worrying about scarcity is our culture's version of post-traumatic stress. It happens when we've been through too much, and rather than coming together to heal, which requires vulnerability, we're angry and scared and at each other's throats. We have abandoned vulnerability and each other to save ourselves. And the truth of the matter is, we can't save ourselves. We are all in this together. So we have to stick together in order to make anything better. We have to start with our own vulnerability. We've got to be willing to see how vulnerable we are and be able to start to live from that vulnerability. When we put up walls between ourselves and the people that we need to help, we can't connect with them in a real way, and we can't empathize with them, and then we can't make real change. Antoinette Tufte, the school administrator in Georgia who talked the gunman out of shooting anyone at all, is an example of this kind of strength. She stood strong, not letting the man through any further into the school than her desk. And she showed courage when she shared her vulnerability with the man pointing a gun at her. She showed him that she was hurting too, that she understood that life sucks, and the only way we can make it through is together. As the poet Chris Jami says, to share your weakness is to make yourself vulnerable, and to make yourself vulnerable is to show your strength. Antoinette saved lives by showing her vulnerability, and in her vulnerability, she showed her strength. We all have vulnerabilities. We all have inner strength, and we can all make a difference in this world. But if we really want to make change, we've got to face our part in the problem. Facing your own faults is a huge, scary act of vulnerability. Looking at the ways that you've inadvertently played a part in a society that is broken can shake you down to the foundation. But facing that vulnerability makes it possible to see a path forward. Not that long ago, I was shaken by my experience taking a class on white privilege. I sat in a room with many other people and realized that I make certain assumptions about the way the world works that don't ring true to many people of color. I feel like the world is a generally safe place. I know that I can find people who look like me in most places that I go. I took these things for granted. There was recently, in the end of March, a white privilege conference and there here in Madison, and it was moving for so many people. And if you're still interested in learning more about white privilege and what that means, there will be a forum held jointly by First Unitarian Society and the Cap Times on the 24th of this month, which is open to the public for free. So you should come or listen in on the radio. This is important work. It's really important, especially in Madison, in light of the recent Race to Equity report, which many of you may have read or heard about. So moving to Madison for me was a really interesting experience. Having lived in racially diverse neighborhoods, both in San Diego and in Manhattan, I was used to seeing many people of color in my daily life. And I'd heard so much about how wonderful Madison is, and I was delighted to find out that it was true. This place is so great. And when I was here, I realized that it felt comfortable. And to my chagrin, I realized that why it felt comfortable was that I did not see a whole lot of people of color, and most of the neighborhoods I went through were upper middle class, and I felt really, really ashamed of myself for thinking that. Oh, it's safe here because I don't see people of color. What? That's terrible. I felt like I'd bought into the propaganda that white people are safe and people of color are dangerous, like I'd betrayed my own belief that I was a good person working toward the goal of ending racism. I had to open myself up to the discomfort of admitting this to myself, and I've had to open myself up to vulnerability to be able to admit this to you. We have to start from our own vulnerability and tenderness and be willing to stretch our comfort zone in order to change. So here I am, standing in front of you, sharing my vulnerability, pushing the limits of my discomfort. I hope you will choose to do the same. I am still a work in progress. I still have to be open and vulnerable to finding out new things about myself. And I am still looking for small ways to be rebellious and create change, even if it's only in myself. Tomorrow, I might find a way to create change in a little more rebellious way, in a little more public way, but tomorrow, we together might be able to change the world. May it be so. We now extinguish our chalice. Do we do that together? Do you read the words with me? Yeah. We'll do that. Okay. These are great words. You'll love them. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. And now, before you head off to enjoy coffee hour, it's time to greet those around you and say hello.